This is The Best of Our Knowledge, a presentation of National Productions.
In 2012, the New York Times Magazine featured a series of articles that created quite a wave of comments and attention, both good and bad. This series was about a new field of intelligence research that reveals what researchers call a revolution in human intellectual abilities. The research shattered decades of dogma, with scientists publishing studies showing that fluid intelligence, the ability to learn, solve novel problems, and get to the heart of things, can be increased through training.
This is the equivalent of Newton sitting under the tree getting hit by an apple and going, gravity.
Today on The Best of Our Knowledge, we'll hear from the author of those articles, which have been collected in a new book. We'll also spend an academic minute finding out why calling someone a blockhead isn't necessarily a bad thing. I'm Bob Barrett, and this is The Best of Our Knowledge. One of the most talked about series of articles in the New York Times Magazine has now been expanded into a book for anyone who's wanted to be smarter. The book is called Smarter: The New Science of Building Brain Power, and it penetrates the new field of intelligence training to reveal what some researchers call a revolution in human intellectual ability, and others insist is completely bogus. To sort the fact from fiction, veteran science journalist Dan Hurley met with over 200 leading scientists and explored many of the methods on himself. The Best of Our Knowledge's Joe Donahue spoke with Dan Hurley about his book and asked when he first became aware of this new science that's supposed to make us smarter.
So I began with an article in Neurology Today, which is the newspaper of the American Academy of Neurology, about research being done into drugs to treat Down syndrome, which is the leading genetic cause of cognitive disability. This was so surprising to me because many scientists had written off Down syndrome because, you know, it's also known as trisomy 21. Instead of just having two copies of the 21st chromosome, these folks have three. And that's just considered such an overwhelming genetic challenge that most people had kind of thrown off their hands and said, we can't figure out how to fix something like that. And then it turned out that this researcher in Colorado, Alberto Costa, was researching a drug using memantine, which is also known as Namenda. People take it for the early stages of Alzheimer's disease. And he found biochemical reasons why it might be able to help people with Down syndrome. And he published the first human trial of a drug that had worked in mice. And he's really gotten some exciting results. And when I did that, I kind of stepped back and said, what about people that don't have a serious cognitive disorder? Can the rest of us do anything? And it turns out that there's this very exciting new field of research that has busted wide open since 2008.
And since 2008, there's a lot that goes into this as far as, and this is what you talk about in the book, it's controversial all the way around, right? I mean, there are people, for everyone who says, yes, this works, there's a whole school of thought that says, no, this is just silly.
That's really not true.
Okay.
That impression could be had, and journalists often have a problem with that kind of situation. You know, even in politics, for instance, especially in politics, you know, journalists are taught to do, you know, this group says such and so, but the other group says this other thing, and who are we to judge, right? So you got to report on everything, as though there is no truth to a matter. And in politics, probably there isn't.
there is that.
In science, there ought to be, right? So I took a lot of time to look at, there is a group of people that insist it's nonsense. These are some leading researchers. And I went to a dozen or so meetings. I talked with everybody I could find, and really, what it turns out is that there have been four studies published finding no benefits of cognitive training compared to about 75, and the number just keeps going up, randomized placebo-controlled studies in prominent scientific journals finding that this stuff does work. It does have benefits. And so for people to grab onto the continuing views of the small group of skeptics, I think at this point it's the tide has turned, and it's really impossible to keep seriously arguing that this stuff is of no benefit.
Now, with that said, from my reading of the book, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, but with that said, it does seem that there is question as to some techniques work better than others.
Absolutely. It's early days. So
yeah.
I thought the fun of this book is that I was trying to catch a wave of a brand new field and watch as this field is really born. This is the equivalent of Newton sitting under the tree getting hit by an apple and going, gravity. So the studies are continuing to come out. And what's clear at this point is cognitive training of various kinds does have significant benefits in the short term, certain kinds. And what people are now trying to figure out is, what is the best kind for whom? How long does it work? What's the best way to increase it? Can you combine methods? So it's a fun, exciting, brand new field of scientific research is what I would say.
And with that said, that it is a brand new, exciting field, some of this is as old as the hills and is just being supplemented with new science, but some of the old thoughts certainly come into here. It is very much a mix of old and new.
Well, it is, except, you know, there are many, many things that people have said for hundreds and thousands of years. For instance, we've all heard fish is brain food, right? Well, guess what? There's no evidence that that's true. And fish oil supplements given to infants and pregnant mothers has actually shown to possibly have bad effects on their cognitive development. On the other hand, a sound mind in a sound body. I mean, this was first uttered a couple thousand years ago. And that turns out to be true. It turns out that physical exercise is one of the best ways to improve cognitive abilities. So the obesity epidemic clearly is hurting people's ability to think straight. The fitter you are, the better your mind is going to be able to work.
You mentioned the fish and fish oil, and
sure.
But yet alcohol, moderate alcohol, perhaps can help us.
Which is really surprising because all we've ever heard is, you know, every time someone takes a drink, that we've all joked, ha-ha, killing brain cells right now.
Right.
But it seems, according to Lumosity, you know, the giant company that offers brain games online,
right.
They have looked at the performance of people that use it and who have been questioned as to lifestyle habits. And those who say they drink moderately, occasionally, appear to do better than teetotalers. So it's pretty funny. And I have a piece coming out in The Atlantic showing that sex appears to improve cognitive abilities. And, you know, these studies are done in rodents. because I guess they can't go in and check how many brain cells have grown in humans. But it does seem that sexual activity increases the growth of new neurons in the brain.
So, I mean, obviously, these are things we want to be true, right? I mean, we
look
for them to be true.
That's the best news anybody ever got.
You write about, and again, this is the sort of the mix of old and new, but you write in the book about music and the thought that music lessons, pretty much at any age, can improve mental functioning. And we've always heard for centuries, really, of the importance of music on on us, and maybe not as far as intelligence, but certainly as making us more complete, and the benefits of music, both playing it and listening to it.
Yeah, so there was some really unfortunate research done like a decade ago where this thing called the Mozart effect became popularly known. And it was based on a single tiny study, and that wasn't very well designed. And it got turned into this crazy fad in which people thought that just playing Mozart while they were pregnant, while a woman was pregnant, or when you have your little baby asleep in the crib, that that would make a kid smarter. And that's just so absurd on its face. People quickly showed that this is ridiculous. But what does seem to be helpful, and there have been randomized trials published in serious journals, that if you take a kid or an adult and you have them begin learning how to play a new instrument or doing serious music education with them, that there are cognitive benefits that show up in the ability to solve problems and improve your something that's called working memory, your ability to juggle facts and keep track of things in your mind. It's sometimes called your mind's memo pad or the working space of your mind. So music does seem to have benefits. And I tried out, I learned to play the Renaissance lute.
Yes.
And I noticed very quickly that when you're trying to control both your left hand holding the frets and your right hand, which finger are you playing this note with, it's really a lot like a lot of these tough cognitive games that get you trying to focus on multiple items of attention at the same time and keep track of things. That's really where the payoff seems to be in terms of training, straightforward cognitive training, of paying attention to multiple things at once. And unfortunately, you know, it's not all as fun as sex and alcohol. A lot of these things are really challenging.
Right.
And, you know, people that think they're going to get a free ride are in for a rude awakening. It's tough to do these things, but it's also inspiring, and it pays off.
You have a great stories in here about your lute lessons. And one of the things that I just remember and I thought was very funny was just how expensive a lute is. I had no idea.
Oh, my God.
Thousands of dollars.
Most of them are. I found one from a company in the Middle East, from Pakistan, that apparently is the only mass manufacturer of lutes. Because, you know, who's ever seen someone playing a Renaissance lute? They're really not used by most people today, unless they're lovers of early music. But I had seen one when I was 19 years old, and took a summer semester in London and met a friend's uncle who was sitting there playing the lute. And I looked at that and I went, oh my God, when I get old and bald, I got to do that. And now I finally have.
Still to come, Joe Donahue's conversation with Dan Hurley continues as they bring the music lessons back to the science of the mind. That's next on The Best of Our Knowledge. Got any questions or comments about The Best of Our Knowledge? Send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. And if you'd like to listen to this or any past programs again, you can find them online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. You can start your own archive with a CD copy of the program. Call toll-free 800-323-9262. Be sure to ask for The Best of Our Knowledge, number 1220. This is The Best of Our Knowledge. I'm Bob Barrett. Our guest today is veteran science journalist Dan Hurley. He's speaking with The Best of Our Knowledge's Joe Donahue about his new book called Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. They were talking about Hurley learning to play the lute, and Joe brings the conversation back to the subject of science.
You have a line in the book about that that says, "The skill I was practicing now was not just playing the lute, but maintaining my own attention. My mind was the instrument." And in many cases, that's exactly what is happening, right?
Yeah, it's a very peculiar thing. What rocket scientists do and what people in math are doing, you know, this is all about rationality, right? Cognitive control. So in a way, there's a brand problem, what marketers might call, for right. this field, this subject. Because a lot of people, our culture has gotten very used to poo-pooing the notion of rationality. That almost has a negative connotation these days. The catch is, though, that your ability to control your thoughts and pay attention to multiple items at the same time and, you know, avoid letting your mind wander, for instance, staying on task, this turns out to be really closely related to your emotional control as well. You know, a lot of people with significant mental psychological illnesses, you know, depression, schizophrenia, other ailments like that, your working memory, your ability to keep track of things and figure things out really goes downhill. It's one of the worst effects of these ailments, in fact. You know, that's why someone who's, if you have major depression, people often lose their jobs, can't work, they become really disabled. And much of it is because of this ability to control the content of your mind. You know, it does sound very Western and rational, but mindfulness meditation is really bringing you in the same direction. You're in control, you're staying focused on the here and now and the present, and that is what's necessary for thinking straight.
And something that's employed by military personnel.
It is. The military have been studying this field very closely. There's another kind of treatment called transcranial direct current stimulation. This is like taking a flashlight battery, a 9-volt battery, and hooking it up to two little wires, and one goes to the part of the brain that you want to stimulate, and the other goes to, you know, a part that, you know, over right near your eye where your brain isn't located, and you turn it on, and of course they use more careful devices, but this has been found to be an effective treatment for some people with depression, for improving all kinds of cognitive abilities and treating all kinds of problems. And the military has found that with this device, it's called TDCS, they can improve the continued alertness of military personnel better than they can with any other method they've ever tested. It's kind of extraordinary. So this idea, you know, it might seem kind of like self-help, just, you know, helping grandpa remember where his keys are, helping your kid do a little better on his test.
Right.
But the possibility that you could help a lot of folks improve their cognitive abilities, this is a really heavy subject. I mean, this is a big deal for humanity. I mean, if you can help people who are cognitively disabled, if you can amp up, you know, there's a continuing decades-long problem of people from disadvantaged backgrounds performing a lot less well in schools. And schools often don't know what to do. They want to try preschool, they try this, they try that. Many of these methods don't seem to work well. Cognitive training could help these folks. And that's a really big deal for education in the United States.
As we wrap up, and as you do in the book, you present many methods, you present many ideas that you have come across. And ultimately, you say that combining two, three, a couple of these is ultimately the most effective approach.
That seems to be what folks are saying. There are only a handful of studies all of the TDCS studies using transcranial direct current stimulation are combined with another training method. But would the best thing to be to start doing some exercising while learning to play a musical instrument, while doing these online brain training things? I think so. And in fact, that's what I did when I tested these methods out. And according to some really carefully done tests, my fluid intelligence increased 16%. Of course, those are just pencil and paper tests. I can say that I felt way better and way more alert than I, you know, I'm 56 years old. I felt like, you know, 20 years younger. I honestly did. Now, scientifically, that means nothing, you know, and I'm a science reporter, but I want to test it out on myself just to see what I personally can make of this. But it really looks like a new field that offers a lot of promise for a lot of people.
Again, the name of Dan Hurley's new book is Smarter, The New Science of Building Brain Power. He spoke with the best of our knowledge's Joe Donahue. Calling someone a blockhead isn't usually meant as a compliment, but perhaps it should be. That's the topic of today's Academic Minute.
Welcome to the Academic Minute. I'm Lynn Pascarella, president of Mount Holyoke College. Department store aisles are filled with flashing battery-operated devices to engage your baby. But as Roberta Golenkoff, professor of education, psychology, and linguistics at the University of Delaware reveals, some of the most educational toys haven't changed in centuries.
North Americans love technology. If it talks to us, requires a charge, and responds to a touch, we gotta have it. But is the same true for our kids? Although they love these devices too, should parents be tempted to forego purchasing those colorful blocks and puzzles that have been staples in children's toy chests for centuries? A study we conducted suggests that opting for an electronic toy over that block set might be a big mistake. Playing with blocks may be crucial for helping children develop spatial thinking or envisioning where blocks go in relation to other blocks as they build. Putting block structures together and taking them apart may yield important lessons for math, too, where, after all, we add parts and take parts away all the time. We asked 3-year-old girls and boys to copy 6 block structures we built. So, for example, we showed each child a block structure made out of 4 blocks and asked them to make the same thing. We gave them the exact number of blocks they needed, but all separated. Not so simple for a 3-year-old. For one thing, the blocks have little pips on them. If a child puts a block over the wrong pips, they made a mistake. And children have to notice whether a block in the model is horizontal or perpendicular to the block on the bottom. We found that both boys and girls who were better at copying the block designs were also better on nonverbal math problems. Experiences with building blocks may turn out to be building a foundation for understanding math.
That was Roberta Golenkoff of the University of Delaware.
Production support for the Academic Minute comes from Newman's Own Foundation in partnership with Mount Holyoke College. Thank you. That's all the time we have for this week's program. If you'd like to listen again, join us online at our flagship station's website. Just go to wamc.org and click on the programs link. And if you have any questions or comments about the program, send them in. Our email address is knowledge@wamc.org. I'm Bob Barrett. Be sure to join us next time for another edition of The Best of Our Knowledge.
Bob Barrett is producer of The Best of Our Knowledge. Dr. Alan Chartok is executive producer. The Best of Our Knowledge is a production of WAMC Radio's National Productions, which is solely responsible for its content. Hear more at wamc.org.